Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Shaq Hislop. Lots going on today. Later on in the programme, Don and Jan will be here to discuss that handball in the Everton-Manchester City game. But we start with the Chelsea statement, which was, of course, released on behalf of Roman Abramovich. The statement says, "During my near 20-year ownership of Chelsea FC, I've always viewed my role as a custodian of the club whose job it is ensuring that we are as successful as we can be today, as well as build for the future, while also playing a positive role in our communities. I've always taken decisions with the club's best interest at heart. I remain committed to these values. That is why I am today giving trustees of Chelsea's charitable foundation the stewardship and care of Chelsea FC. I believe that currently they are in the best position to look after the interests of the club, players, staff and fans." For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Julien Laurent. Jules, what does this mean, if anything?
I've got a bit of background now in Chelsea, a briefing what this statement means. It means that Roman Abramovich is still the owner of the club, of course. That doesn't change. But after all the pressure that he's been under the last few days, his name has been very much in the news here in England, in the UK, with MPs and also of people asking for the British government to take sanctions against Roman Abramovich for his links or his alleged links with and relationship with Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin in Russia. And in response to all that pressure, let's put it that way, he decided to step down from running Chelsea Football Club as a club. Although never being there, I don't think he doesn't really run the club anyway. But certainly on paper, as the owner of the club, he's running it, and he decided to step down to this, to leave the day-to-day running of the club and directing of the club to the trustees of that the Chelsea Charity Foundation, people like Bruce Berg, people like Emma Hayes, the Chelsea women's manager, who is part of that trustee, Sir Sebastian Coe, for example, the former Olympian, the runner. He's also part of that trustee committee, and for them to now run the club on a daily basis, which again they're not going to do because other people are doing that at the club, like Marina Granovskaya, for example, or even Peter Cech. But at least this means that Roman Abramovich stays the owner, but is not involved anymore in running the club on a daily basis, even if, like I said before, he was not really doing that before anyway.
So this doesn't really make any difference, does it, Jules?
I don't think so. I think this is a way of diffusing the pressure that Roman Abramovich, and indirectly, or I guess directly maybe, to Chelsea is under. That's why the words in this statement are a bit strange, very intriguing, not clear. If he wanted to say, "I'm not running the club anymore," they would have put it that way instead of talking about care and stewardship, which no one really knows what that means in football terms. So I don't think it changes anything. It's just, I think, trying to push back a little bit or push away all that pressure, all the links between Chelsea, Abramovich, Putin, Russia, the Kremlin, the war in Ukraine. Chelsea are also briefing that they're obviously horrified by what's happening in Ukraine. They're also trying to make us believe that Roman Abramovich and Vladimir Putin don't have any relationship anymore, which might be true, might not be true, but we know that there was certainly a time where they were very, very close. So I think maybe to diffuse all of that, they put out this statement and hoping that people will stop talking about it. And actually, so far, it's been the opposite, because we talked even more about Roman Abramovich, Vladimir Putin and Chelsea Football Club.
Meanwhile, other developments today, of course, since we've seen Russia invade Ukraine this week. Poland were due to meet Russia in that World Cup qualifying playoff. They released this statement today, the Polish president saying, "No more words, time to act. Due to the escalation of the aggression of the Russian Federation towards Ukraine, the Polish national team does not intend to play the playoff match against Russia. This is the only right decision. We're in talks with Swedish and Czech Association to bring forward a joint statement to FIFA." We heard from the Polish captain, Robert Lewandowski, coming out and saying, "It's the right decision. I can't imagine playing a match with a Russian national team in a situation when armed aggression in Ukraine continue. Russian footballers and fans are not responsible for this, but we can't pretend that nothing is happening." We've heard Sweden come out as well, Jules, and saying that they will not take part in a match with Russia either. looking at this just from the outside in, the only option seems to be, from a FIFA perspective, is to kick Russia out.
They have to act. It's been long already, too long for me, for my liking, and for a lot of people liking. The fact that they moved the Champions League final, UEFA did. There's that contract with Gazprom. UEFA saying that the Russian clubs will have to play in neutral venues, Russia as well, Ukraine, etc. Okay, this was good a couple of days ago. Now the real decisions have to come. The real sanctions have to come. And as you said, there's only one, is to expel Russia and Russian clubs to every UEFA and FIFA competition. This is it. This is the only way. This should already have been done, but there's still obviously a lot of time for FIFA and UEFA to do it now. It's just a boycott. Simply, this is what Poland have come out with. This, let's call it what it is. This is a boycott of Russia. Sweden and Czech Republic will do exactly the same. I would like to see the same being done for Spartak Moscow in the Europa League, for example. And then, of course, FIFA and UEFA have to get on board. They have to lead by example now. They have to show the way. Remember back at the beginning of the 90s, Yugoslavia, when the war started there, they were expelled from the Euros where they'd qualified in 1992 and could not play any games. This is exactly the same. This is what we have to do. Biathlon, for example, which is a tiny sport with a tiny international federation, have just banned Russia and Belarus, who are their ally in this war, from every single competition organized by the Biathlon International Federation. Why are biathlon doing it and we're still waiting for football, the biggest club, the biggest sport in the world, to do so? It's exactly the same. So I'm really hoping that FIFA and UEFA will now take that decision. It's the only one they can take. Otherwise, I think they will lose a lot of credit.
For a lot more on this, be sure to go over to our YouTube channel and subscribe to ESPN FC.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Conclusive evidence. So that's what the Premier League have said about that penalty that Everton wanted in their 1-0 defeat against Manchester City. The big talking point from the game. City won't care though. Three more precious points for them, which for the moment extends their lead over Liverpool to 6 points in the table. Of course, Liverpool not in action this weekend because they're in the Carabao Cup final. Let's welcome in, shall we, Don Acheson, Jan Agerfjordtoft with us. Don, I feel drawn to you because you have been tweeting up a storm about this handball. Inconclusive evidence.
Well, I told you last week, didn't I? And I said, you know, I expect Man City to drop points because of the Goodison factor, not the form that Everton were in. I just know what it's like to play in that fixture. And I know how emotional it is to play in that fixture. And Everton were brilliant, but it will all hinge on the handball. And I have not met any ex-pro that says it wasn't handball. It was clear, it was obvious. The spin of the ball's done Rodri. His arm's in a really unnatural position. It's high, it's wide. The ball hasn't struck him on the arm. His arm has struck the ball. I mean, I don't know what you see if you don't think that's a penalty. Now, I would understand Paul Tierney, the referee, missing it because he was blocked by a couple of players and he was actually the wrong side. But I've spoken to one or two referees because I asked for clarification, if the referee can actually request to the guy on VAR if he can see it again, and you actually can. So Paul Tierney, if he got himself in a bad position, which he did, he can then
Basically, there was not enough evidence to suggest that he had his. And of course, these are the new rules, aren't they, that were introduced, in the fact that the arm isn't the arm, it's the sleeve line. And I imagine that is what they've used, basically, to state that this was not a conclusive penalty.
Well, first of all, I think that if you're going to explain the handball rule, you had to have Albert Einstein, if he was alive here, instead of me and Don Hutchinson. That is point two. Point one. Point two is that when I discuss the different handball situation in and around football, I always say that there is one thing that is 100% clear, is that if you gain an advantage of using your hand, it's a handball. And when I grew up, that was the only rule we knew. Was it an advantage using your hand? Not advantage doing it. It's so obvious that he uses his hand to get an advantage in that situation. I can't believe in the world that that is not a penalty. And for people sitting, you said 2 minutes, and you used 2 minutes not to see that it's a penalty. That is a performance of the night, isn't it?
Listen, we've sat here and discussed the empty language that often comes with VAR and making those decisions. And we've referenced clear and obvious. And I think this inconclusive, as is used in this statement, is the emptiest I have heard so far. How can anybody look that over? Anybody involved in the game at any level, look that over and not determine that as a handball is beyond me. How do professionals take 2 minutes with replays, slow motion, and every angle available to mankind and say that somehow that is inconclusive? It's simply beyond belief, and I don't know how to explain it. I really don't. If you're Everton, absolutely you feel cheated by this, given your position in the table. If you're Liverpool, you feel that there's some kind of conspiracy favouring Manchester City, because, and I'll say it again, if you're involved in this game in any capacity at any level, you look at that, you come up with the only conclusion there can be, that it's a handball.
It's just incompetence. But you see everybody going about conspiracies and blah, blah, blah. This is just incompetence.
No. Yeah, but it is. And I think Xhaka makes a good point, because they use 2 minutes doing that, and then they come out with an empty, stupid statement, if I may say. But what they're really saying is that the team we have put at the VAR bus or studio or cellar or whatever they sit, we have no clue about the game. We have some rules that we try to look at desperately for 2 minutes, and we're making mistakes. That's fine, do a mistake. But what they are actually telling us, in situations like this, they have no clue about the game. And that is a big thing. And they play it into the hands. There are people, I'm a fan of VAR in the principle that they can turn around things that are clear and obvious. But here they are telling us, we have no clue of the game. And then the team set up in this bus or whatever they're sitting is wrong. It's a wrong team.
You know, that's the thing, Dan. And this is what drives me most mad about when we discuss laws and decisions. Everybody takes the law as it's written and breaks it down word for word and tries to explain the situation given how the law is written. But the truth of the matter is, there is no way, and Jan touched on it about the handball law, etc. There is no way you can write a law that covers every single incident that the game is going to throw out. There is absolutely no way. So you try to make it broad and encompassing, and then you trust the referees to use common sense, to use the law as a guide and use common sense in how you make your decision. You cannot hide behind the language, because, again, there is no way you can write a law that is going to cover everything that happens in a game. And so for you to now take these incidents, see them, let go of whatever common sense you have and hide behind three or four sentences in the law book is doing the game a disservice.
Away from that incident, concern for City that it took them so long to break down Everton, Don?
A tiny bit, but City are City, Dan. The professional have got world-class players. They find a way. I mean, Everton were really good, but they ran out of legs, and that's what City are brilliant at, because they move the ball. They're never quite static. They don't slow the game down. They're always probing. Jordan Pickford had to pull off some good saves towards the end. It was a bad Michael Keane error, and I think when you see it back again, it tells you how tired his legs were, because he couldn't move his legs. Mm. It got a deflection. He was static. He couldn't react. There was no movement from his legs. He was probably dead out on his feet. So, City will take it for sure. But Everton fans tonight on social media, and you know the reaction of people like Ashley Cole and Frank Lampard, who are at the football club, must be proud of the performance, but so, so frustrated for a really, really simple handball.
Don is one of those people on social media, yes, by the way. Yeah. Very much so. Meanwhile, Manchester United take on Watford at Old Trafford. I think many had this as a home banker. 0-0 is how it finished. Not for lack of chances for Manchester United. Well, not for lack of shots, but hardly any on target, Jan.
No, and I got that feeling following this game that I said it on Twitter that this was like a rocket, and at the end there was no fuel. And it was also like Superman Ronaldo, just there wasn't any kryptonite, is that what you call it in English, left in him. Because they started well, Cristiano Ronaldo hitting the post for a Van Bissaka across and everything. And I think that's the one we see here, yeah, quite early in the game. And that was the closest he got. But there was some, but it's not only down to Cristiano Ronaldo. They had so many chances today. It was just unbelievable. To be fair, the old man in goal was for Ben Foster, had a great game, great saves. But at the end, Cristiano Ronaldo and the rest of the team, they were just frustrated. They couldn't believe that they didn't score goals. It was a bit like the Middlesbrough game when my old club beat them in the cup, but they couldn't score goals. It was just one of those things.
How did you bring that to Middlesbrough? That's impressive.
Because if you saw that game, they were missing chances for fun. Right. And Ralf Rangnick, I'm not sure that is a great sign. But Ralf Rangnick said today that as a coach, your only job is to make your team create chances. And as then, it's up to the players. Of course, it's up to the players, but they can't score goals. And when you have Cristiano Ronaldo have an average of 40 a year the last 200 years, then that is a worrying thing for Manchester United.
And worrying thing as well for them, obviously, they've got a big run of fixtures coming up, Don, starting with the Manchester Derby, obviously second leg against Atleti as well. Against Watford is where you need to be picking up points to keep this hope alive of qualifying for the top four.
Totally agree. I was calling the game today and I was saying in game that it's a case for Man United to be patient. It will come and the chances were coming. On another day, they win 5 or 6. This one, I don't think was on Rangnick. I don't think Dan. I think it was on his players. Ronaldo missed 3 or 4. Bruno missed a really simple right foot volley that he could have scored from 6 or 7 yards. That was on the players. Alanga, I've got to mention Anthony Alanga. He was easily by a distance man of the match, but that's a blow. They got booed off after the game, and probably rightly so in a way, because it's a game that United should be winning, but they had so many chances. But you're right, when you go into March and you look at their fixtures, on paper, they're horrendous.
Meanwhile, we start the day, of course, at Elland Road, Leeds taking on Spurs. Spurs with a big victory, beating Leeds by 4-0 to take all 3 points in that tie. Thoroughly deserving. Once again, Harry Kane was excellent. Kulusevski on the goal score sheet as well, Doherty and Son. The four different goal scorers. We've been talking about Spurs top four, but I think we've got to talk about first the Bielsa story coming out of England, that by mutual consent, they've agreed for him to step down as coach at Leeds United. This is all happening as we're going to air, Jan. Is it inevitable?
I think it's inevitable because, I mean, there is always this rule in football that is also always a team that is too good to go down. I mean, that could happen to Leeds this year because everybody says Bielsa is doing this, Bielsa is doing that. I mean, how he defends with that team, I mean, I don't get it. I mean, this is 1954 Germany winning in Bern. I mean, the defense of it. So it feels so old fashioned. And at the same time, every coach and every nerdy professor of football says that Bielsa is the most brilliant coach ever. But the hard thing about football is that you all live by results. And if you lose 4 or 5 goals in every game, there is something wrong, even with the coach. He will be remembered as one of a great coach, done a fantastic job at Leeds. It's a cult person for Leeds. But to save them now, they need someone in to just save this season for them. Although, if not, they will go down to the Championship.
Yeah, that's a massive task, though, isn't it, Don?
Well, it is. I mean, what a ride it's been under Bielsa. And I've been a Bielsa fan. I've been a Leeds fan because they've been great to watch. I take you back to, you know, Newcastle United when Steve Bruce was the manager and John Joe Shelby had a shot against Man City at St James's Park from the kickoff and retreated for 90 minutes. Brighton under Chrissy Hughton were the same. They were scared of the big boys. David Wagner's Huddersfield, they were scared stiff of the big boys. They didn't really have a go. At least Leeds have sort of had a go against the big teams and made it entertaining. It's the last couple of months, Dan, which has done them, where they're leaking 5s, 6s, 7s. That can't happen. And then all of a sudden, the cameras today were panning on the hierarchy and the owners of the club. And you just had a sneaky feeling that they're going to have the conversation because they are drifting. They're like Everton. They're like one or two clubs, like Brentford's another one that's getting ever so close when the teams at the bottom, like Newcastle, like Burnley, are actually in decent form. So the Leeds hierarchy now are just starting to panic.
And apparently, Jan, American Jesse Marsh is the favourite to take over from Bielsa. This seems like a massive step.
Yeah, but it's still interesting because if they let him go now, I mean, in Germany they call it Feuerwehrmann, a fire guy that have to come in and just save the season. Yeah, Jesse Marsh could be the one. I'm a fan of Jesse Marsh. He failed in Leipzig and he was maybe a bit too impatient. There were some private things going on with illness in his family and everything. But, well, Jesse Marsh, he doesn't have a month's time to understand English football. He has to be there straight away. Having said that, going for one of the usual suspects could also take the down. So it's a big call for Leeds United because now it's all about saving the season for them, let them stay in the big paradise called Premiership. And Jesse Marsh, with his kind of we stand together, we're marching together and everything, maybe he will be the right fit. And I guess they've done their homework and they've talked to him. And he's the last couple of weeks following Leeds United because there is no time for him. There is no preschool. He's going right to the exam, and being an American, he's starting a bit behind as well, as we know when Bob Bradley came to English football.
What do you think, Don?
I think Jesse Marsh would be a risk now. I think in the summer, I think it would be a very smart and a good appointment. But now when you're struggling and you're on a run, and a horrendous run, that would take a little bit of time, I think, for Jesse Marsh to get used to the Leeds players, their style, the Leeds players getting used to him, adapting to how quick and how different the Premier League is. I think they might have to go safe. It might have to be a big Sam. I know Leeds fans have been quite vocal on social media and they would actually rather be Elsa than someone like Big Sam Allardyce coming in. But he might be the safe option. You know, even if you've got to do what Everton done a few years back, you give them a hefty payoff if you stay in the division because that's the promised land. That's where Leeds need to be. If they're going to kick on, they've got people like Junior Firpo at the football club. You know, Dan James, Rafinha, Rodrigo. You know, they've got players who Bielsa's brought in who, in fairness, they would never have attracted without Bielsa. So it's a massive appointment and a big one for Leeds.
Don, just explain to us how difficult it is, though, for the players who are used to playing under Bielsa in his unique ways to make that switch to a Big Sam coming in and playing completely different, just flipping the style of football on its head. How tricky is that from players' perspective, given that they're running out of matches?
Well, I'm going to hate myself for saying this, Dan, because I am a Bielsa fan. But this man-for-man marking when you haven't got the ball, it will never work for a multitude of reasons. I could go on for hours and hours on the man-to-man marking side of the game, and it can't be done. So what the players will do, they'll actually feel, I don't know if relieved's the right word. I don't know if it'll feel relieved, but it's been pretty intense. And I think a new voice, a new style, a more defensive-minded approach where they can If Big Sam, say, for instance, is the man that's going to come in, he's going to make them super organised. He's going to have details for fullbacks and centre-backs and relationships for midfield players. There'll be a solid base to try and work on. Whereas I think at the moment when you watch Leeds, they're just all over the place, and it's a sad watch.
But having said that, Dan, Big Sam, yes, he's been the answer to so many questions in English football the last years, but maybe this new generation, then they won't have his leadership either, Don. So, I mean, that could be a risk as well.
They would, Jan. Yeah, they would.
No. I'm not sure. You're too old to say that.
Just say in the league.
No. Don, you're too old. The new generation, they don't want to listen to this bully shouting people. I'm just saying, you can say it's rubbish, but you can say that there was English or British players saying it was a risk to take Thomas Tuchel as well. So, I mean, sometimes you British are not the best one to do that analyse.
It's completely
just
different.
Get a guy it's not totally different at all. Because there's on one side you have a tactician coming in and then you have Big Sam coming in. Oh, he is the answer. Then maybe that is the wrong question. Because the young generation, they won't have it. And Dan's question to go from Bielsa just on the pitch is one, but also outside the pitch, maybe that is not the answer. That is risky as well, and Don, and you know that because you're bright enough to understand that.
I am bright enough to understand it, Jan. But let me tell you now, if you offer the Leeds players a chance to be safe under Big Sam, and you're in the Premier League next season, they will take it all day long.
Dan, we're not discussing that. That we're discussing some games up down the road. I'm just saying we're talking about the matter of risk. So if you're taking a Jesse March, and I tried to explain that, and I'm a fan of Jesse March, I just say there is a part of his risk. Then you come with Big Sam, and you just swap over some hurdles and say, if the Leeds players get asked, if you say to the Leeds players, hey, listen, do you want Big Sam to stay in the Premier League, or do you want Jesse March to go down? Yeah, of course, Don, they would say Big Sam. So that is not a part of the discussion. I'm just saying the risk in the management now sitting together over a red wine from Italy discussing which managers coming in, they have to take plus and minus with both kind of managers. That was my point.
But where's the risk very quickly in appointing Big Sam that's never, ever, ever been relegated?
Because it's a big risk that he can get to a new generation of players. And that's what you have to discuss because you are going from Bielsa, who doing all kind of Albert Einstein kind of tactic, going to Big Sam that you are selling in, that he will save everything. And I'm not just saying that is the analysing they're doing in management, not like you and me sitting in a cellar and I'm sitting in a hotel room in London. That is the thing they have to do.
I'll be honest, I kind of feel Big Sam, the phrase Big Sam has become an adjective more so than talking about the person. In that, when you want a manager who will set up shop and get you defensively, you just automatically say you want Big Sam. Without really, I'm not convinced that Big Sam is the right person for today's football. I'm with Jan on that. I really am not. I think the game has now gone beyond that. But to that point, you want somebody to come and organize things to get you defensive. Here's the big risk for me with that. We are talking about a Leeds team that's been managed by Bielsa for the last 3.5 seasons. Being defensive is not in their DNA. It's not what got them out of the Championship. It's not what kept them in the Premier League last year. And now all of a sudden that ethos of we're going to outscore the opposition is not working. In your last 4 games, you've conceded 17 goals and you've scored twice against Manchester United in a 4-2 defeat. You failed to score in 3 of those. So now everything that you've stood for 3.5 seasons has come apart at the seams. And you need somebody to put it back together and somehow make you into a defensive, tough-to-beat team. I think it's thankless. It's a hiding to nothing, whether it's Jesse Marsh or anybody else. I'm not sure that anybody is looking forward to doing this. At the same time, you do look at somebody like Roy Hodgson, who's come in and at least made Wolves more of an outfit. But Roy Hodgson has experience in this league. He's fought relegation battles with Crystal Palace. Who comes in to Leeds to make that bigger shift? Who knows this league? I'm not sure there's a name out there. And again, for me, Big Sam much as it's a name, is an adjective more so than an option.
I'm going to try and say this in a much less patronising way than Jan did, but Sam did take West Brom down last year, Don. So that just to balance that out a little bit.
Okay. My bad.
Elsewhere in that game, Spurs looked good, Don.
They did, Dan, but it was against the Leeds side who were ridiculously open.
They need big Sam.
And we're talking about a man, Antonio Conte. And we're talking about a man, Antonio Conte, again, and how high he was, how low he's been over the last few days, the moaning, and all of a sudden you handpick a side that are in horrendous form. Like Shaka said, you want to be playing Leeds. And they turned it on, they scored good goals. In all honesty, watching the game, I didn't even think they had to work hard for the goals. They come easy. Harry Kane and Son are just striking up a brilliant relationship again. And I got the feeling at the end of the game, I never really thought Spurs had it out of third or fourth gear. I thought it was simple for them. Professional, good performance.
Yeah, got the job done, Jan. And I suppose after that defeat against Burnley, it was all about getting a win.
Yes, and I think that in the emotional roller coaster of Conte, we shall never forget that he is a great, great manager. You can lose at Burnley, but now he's winning away from home against Leeds United and Manchester City. It's not bad with either. But you had a table there with Son and Kane. It's unbelievable. I mean, you can compare them with the best combination the Premier League have ever seen. And that is... And I think it's nearly ridiculous that we kind of... Harry Kane, when we're talking about the best number nines, the best strikers, yes, we do mention him. But then we're talking about month he doesn't score, times he doesn't score, he's this and he's that. But he's a great goal scorer and he got a fantastic vision of the game as well. And it must be fantastic to play alongside him. I think Son will be very, very happy that he's playing with Harry Kane.
Feel good moment of the day. Had to be at Bradford despite their defeat. Christian Eriksen coming off the bench to make his first appearance for Brentford, since joining the club in the January transfer window. Of course, significant moment after collapsing in the Euros for Denmark. Last year. We'll say thank you very much now to Don for being with us. Don will be back on Extra Time, which as always you can check out over on our YouTube channel. Jan will be here as well. Jan, though, stays with us. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. One plus today, of course, just finished Atletico Madrid in action against Celta Vigo. 14 minutes into this one. Jimenez with a foul on Aspas. It's only a yellow, Shaq. Should it have been a red?
Yeah, quite easily could have been red. I thought Jimenez was very late, caught Aspas high up on the ankle.
Yeah, you take a look at the replays. It's only a yellow that was given, but it...
It's late. I mean, it's so late from Jimenez. And as much as he may try to claim it was unintentional, you see the effect on Aspas' ankle. And he is very lucky to just get yellow.
10 minutes before the break, though, Lodi with the goal to break the deadlock. Keeper, defender, who's to blame here, Shank?
I'll be honest, I don't think the defender could have done much more. I think this is all goalkeeper. As a keeper, you're asking your defender to cut off half the goal. I think the defender does exactly that. Lodi could only go through the defender's legs, which would take it straight down the middle of the goal, which would be a routine save, probably with the legs, or go near post. He goes near and keeper beaten. That's an error.
If that was an error, this was just brilliant, wasn't it? Fantastic second goal for Atleti.
Yeah, it really was. Playing form, Renan Lodi, great ball to pick him out. I like how he takes this just on after the little hop. steers it through the keeper's legs. Question marks about onside, but any replay would show that Lodi was well on. And very well taken goal indeed.
So it finishes then. Atletico Madrid 2, Celta Vigo 0, keeping their hopes very, of course, alive of finishing the Champions League next season. You take a look at what that means. It's going to be quite the race, to Phil, between now and the end of the campaign, between them and Barcelona. Real Betis, of course, can be dragged into it as well. But as it stands, after that result, Atleti back to 3 points clear of Barca, sitting in fourth. Well, for on this, let's welcome in Luis Garcia with us, as is Sid Lowe. Sid, I suppose the big question going into this game is, how would Atleti respond after that Champions League draw against Manchester United? It seems over 90 minutes the response is very well.
Yeah, the response was good. I think there was a sense of satisfaction after the Manchester United game, despite the fact that, of course, they weren't able to win it in the end. And you see that in the lineup being the same tonight. You see that in the kind of the way in which Simeone was talking in the build-up to this game, that idea that Atletico had found some of their identity back, that there was an aggression about them, there was an intensity about them. And, of course, the really important thing from their point of view will be that it's a clean sheet followed by one goal conceded to Manchester United. And now another clean sheet tonight. I mean, for what it's worth, over the course of the game, I thought there were spells of this game in which Celta were the better side. Mm. But Atletico caught them twice. And that new role for Lodi is a really interesting one, him given the freedom to play a little bit higher up the pitch with three central defenders behind him.
Luis, what's changed? Of course, after that humiliating defeat against Levante, that's the win against Osasuna. Great performance against Manchester United. Another win tonight. What's the big difference that you've seen?
Well, I guess it's just the confidence on the players. They start trying to bring back the feelings that they had a few months back, where they weren't doing so well, where they weren't more consistent. And I think also it's very important that the players who are not involved as often, they are delivering. Today, João Félix, that doesn't count with many minutes, performed well. Players like Condovia, players like Herrera, who plays in the middle, they are delivering. They are doing, giving something special to this Atletico Madrid side. At the end, of course, they got so many good players. In the second half, you can see that he makes the changes and he comes in Carrasco, Griezmann, Luis Suarez, De Paul. As you can see, the talent is over there. So the most important is to try to get back the confidence. We've seen today a very solid performance from Atletico Madrid. Even in the moments that they weren't playing well, they were under controlling the game. Never Celta Vigo put under pressure or Black couldn't find the spaces and the gaps in between the defense of Atletico Madrid. And that's the only way that Atletico Madrid is going to recover those feelings from the years back. Trying to keep the clean sheet, trying to get the confidence. And up front, they are going to have so much talent to score goals.
Elsewhere in Madrid, we saw Rayo Vallecano taking on Real Madrid, the league leaders, of course, today looking to extend that lead at the top of the table. Another first half in which Real Madrid failed to score. That is six in a row now in all competitions. The closest they went was in the 24th minute. Asensio with the effort.
They had their chances. Asensio had an effort in the first minute of the game. This one brought an even better save also. The goalkeeper coming back on the inside, opening his body up. Wonderful save.
Madrid thought they'd scored. With 6 minutes to go in the first half, Casemiro with the goal. However, VAR would have a look. And it's offside, throwing a handball as well. There.
Yeah, I mean, take your pick, really. No question about the offside, the handball, whether you debate, there's a push, but two out of three is always going to be ruled out.
No doubt Courtois has been one of Real Madrid's best players this season.
Without question. And again today, this really was an outstanding save. One of a string from Thibaut Courtois. Reactions on point.
Now, what about this? 3 minutes later, big moment in the game. Casemiro, poor first touch and tackle, takes Valentin down. It's only a yellow. Should it have been a red?
Yes. He does catch the ball first, but that extended leg into the ankle of Valentin, no question for me. I understand that the referee misses it in real time, but there's no reason for the VAR not to correct it.
10 minutes to go. What an opportunity here for the host. But once again, Thibaut Courtois unbeatable at the back.
Good reactions in anticipating on the first touch to come out, make himself big for the first save. But then his awareness and covering of the ground to make up the space to make the second, really incredible.
And then at the other end, Real Madrid just make it look so easy.
From two players who we barely mentioned all game long. Karim Benzema, the little slide through ball into Vinicius, and then look at the run of Benzema, look at the awareness of Vinicius. making it look easy when it really wasn't that simple against a determined Rayo team.
Carlo Ancelotti obviously delighted as Real Madrid take all 3 points from Rayo Vallecano, extending their lead at the top of the table. Julian Laurent joins us. Sid and Luis remain with us to reflect on this one. Should we start with Sid, because he was at the game, because he's been at every game in Madrid.
He's been covering some ground.
He's been all over the place. Sid, we've seen this before from Real Madrid this season.
Yes, absolutely we have, and in particular in the last couple of months. Until today, Real Madrid's results had been winning every other game. Well, not able to string two wins together over the last, that goes back an eight-game run. They haven't been particularly impressive, but they've tended to find a way through. Not always, but they've tended to. Of course, we saw it with an Asensio goal from a long way out last week. We saw it with this brilliant combination between Benzema and Vinicius this week. And they still don't really convince Real Madrid over this last couple of months. I think if you go back over the last eight or nine games, you'd probably just say there's only one really good performance in it. But they got through, and that's really, really important for them. The good news, of course, for Real Madrid is look at the recent run from Sevilla. Sevilla were in a position where they could have put themselves a single point behind Real Madrid, and they didn't take it with that missed penalty away at Osasuna, 3 weeks ago. And Sevilla have now drawn four of their last five, which is why Real Madrid is still very much clear at the top.
Yeah, it's another forgettable performance, though, from Real Madrid, Luis. They get it done, very professional. They're going to win the title. But what's wrong? Why are we seeing only glimpses of what they can offer? Why can't they put it together for much more of the game?
Well, I guess it's the intensity on the game. We've been talking a lot about the midfield of Real Madrid, that fantastic Modric, Kroos and Casemiro. But they play 1 week in and 1 week out every single minute of the whole competition. And at the end, you can see that they lose the legs for many, many minutes. And the other teams, they realize that they put a high intensity on the game, they're going to suffer. And we've seen it for many weeks that Real Madrid, when they is not on the ball, they suffer. They look vulnerable at the back. Of course, some other teams, they don't have the quality that this Real Madrid have up front. So at the end, they managed to pull out some very good results. And today was no difference. Nothing much in the first half, waiting for that specific or special moment from a brilliant Vinicius Junior or Benzema. And that's it. We won 1-0. And last week, it happened the same. One moment of magic from Asensio, scored the first goal, and that's it. So at the end, we don't see the best of Real Madrid, but they continue moving forward. So that's why I think that it's going to be very difficult to catch them, and they're going to get the trophy of La Liga.
Hey, Jules, this Benzema's chap, he's not bad, is he?
He's not bad, especially when he's fully fit, when you're 100%. It was quiet, like Shaka said, during the highlights. I think he tried a lot and he dropped a lot deep, and he tried to orchestrate the game like he does on the edge of the box, for example. And it didn't really work out for him, didn't really click until the 83rd or 84th. And that time when he clicks, him and Vinicius, I mean, how many 1-2s have we seen between them all season long? Always the same when Benzema is on the edge of the box. And they find each other. This time it was on the right hand side, usually it's on the left hand side. It's fantastic. I think he's only four goals away from becoming the third best goal scorer in Real Madrid history, which again is an incredible achievement. I don't know if he would get higher up than third, but third already. Considering the little boy that he was, really, and Sid will remember when he joined the club now 13 years ago now, and to get to this point now is just incredible.
Where do you stand on the Casemiro challenge, Luis?
I think for me it was a clear red card. I think he arrived very late. It was a reckless, very dangerous challenge. And I think you can see it in the reaction of Casemiro. He knows that he's wrong. He knows that he's very late. He checked. He doesn't say. And he's very happy to see the yellow card. I think it was a very, very bad tackle. Should have been red card. And once again, I'm with Xhaka. He should be in. That's why he's there, to help the referee to see this kind of situation. And today, I think he didn't call in the right place.
I imagine the home fans agree with Luis, Sid.
Yes, absolutely they do. They're very noisy at Rio anyway. They're very inclined to see, if you like, a conspiracy of power against them. Of course, most people know that this is a club that's very proud of its identity as being from a very working class neighbourhood in Madrid. In fact, not even a neighbourhood, it's almost seen as an independent part of Madrid. And very much they thought that should have been a red card. I must admit, here's another thing. I wonder if Ancelotti kind of knew that as well, because when Casemiro was taken off, what was it, 3 or 4 minutes after that, it kind of felt like there was almost a sense of relief. Let's get him off now before something worse happens. And obviously as well, the other thing from Real Madrid's point of view is that they need to try some other structures in the middle of midfield, some other formations, because they won't have Casemiro available for that second leg against Paris Saint-Germain.
Final point, Sid, just talk us through the development that you've seen of Courtois since he arrived from Chelsea.
I just think he's brilliant. I mean, I know that's not a development, but let's start with the basic fact. He's absolutely brilliant now. I think one of the things that's really changed is how willing Real Madrid are as a team to give him the ball to his feet. He's very, very good with his feet now, which isn't something that he was good at before. I remember him talking to us earlier in the season about that, him saying, look, at Chelsea, in the kind of small-sided games I would play in, I was very good, but I've been at teams that didn't necessarily want me to do that. So that's a thing that's changed. But obviously what really stands out is the fact that every single game, and genuinely, I do mean every single game, he makes at least one outrageously good save. Now, there was a period about 3 or 4 months into his first season back when people doubted him, not so much because he was making mistakes, but because he just wasn't saving anything. You know, there was this idea that this was a permeable goalkeeper. You had a shot and it just went in. And now it seems he saves almost everything. And it really is every game. I mean, so much so, look, we're talking about the quality of Vinicius and Benzema, and they've been fantastic this season, even if the last couple of months have been more difficult for them. But genuinely, you can make a case for saying that actually the player of the year is neither of them two, it's Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, and it's a genuine case as well, Shane.
Of course it is.
As Sid says, every single game there is a big save, but you could just see it. You could just see he's like, bring it on.
I think in the first 3 or 4 months, it looked like Vinicius Jr. was going to establish himself as Real Madrid's best player. But over the last couple, without question, and I put that in context of the wider season, no question is Thibaut Courtois. One of the indescribables around goalkeeping is presence. And I always use Peter Schmeichel as kind of the yardstick. I always felt that when Peter Schmeichel was in goal, when you looked up and you saw Schmeichel, you thought twice about taking the shot.
Yeah.
And that's been the big difference between Thibaut Courtois now and when he first joined Real Madrid. We all knew he was a good goalkeeper at Atletico. We all knew he was a good goalkeeper at Chelsea, but just that uncertain start, and maybe he just felt that the club was a little bit too big for him, and he did not have that presence. Now, every time you get the ball to feet, you look up, you see Courtois, you're thinking, I'm not going to beat him from here. And that goes regardless of whether you're 25 or 30 yards out, or as we saw today, you're 5 or 6 feet away from him. He still somehow produces the save.
We'll say thank you very much to Luis and Sid. Just a reminder, La Liga continues on Sunday. Villarreal against Espanyol is how things start. And then what a massive Seville derby it is. Sevilla against Real Betis. Both teams flying so far this season. A huge contest there. That's followed by Real Sociedad against Osasuna. And finally, Inform Barca take on Athletic Club. And on Monday, it's Granada against Cadiz.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
In Germany, Bayern were made to work hard for their 1-0 victory over Eintracht Frankfurt, but in the end, Leroy Sané's 71st minute goal proved to be the difference between the two sides. And with Borussia Dortmund in action on Sunday, it means the defending champions have a 9-point lead at the top of the table. Jan Lager Fjortoff with us. Jan, a clean sheet for Bayern, I suppose. Maybe it's the big takeaway here, isn't it?
Without Manuel Neuer in goal as well, they manage a clean sheet. But it was an interesting game because this was a working win for Bayern Munich. They worked very hard. I saw some stats after the game saying the duels, the Zweikämpfe, which is called in Germany, that was nearly a record in the Bundesliga. They worked very hard in this game. They played without Thomas Müller as well. And they put Sané on. He was on the bench, came on, and his third touch of the game, he scored a winner against a very good Kevin Trapp. He had a good game for them. As Shaka was saying, a fantastic pass from Joshua Kimmich. My old club, Eintracht Frankfurt, had a big, big chance early in the game with Kostic somehow not using his golden left foot, and he went for the right foot option, but still a deserved win for Bayern Munich, and typical Bayern Munich win, just winning that 1-0 away from home, kind of Manchester City at Goodison, isn't it?
So we thought that'd be it. We'd move on to talk about something else, Jan. But this Lewandowski kind of soap opera developed today. For those who haven't been following it, just explain.
Well, the thing is that they have the best number nine in the world. And as I always said, it's the best since Michael van Basten there. It looks like van Basten as well. The thing is that Bayern Munich, they would love to have Erling Haaland as well. So since he broke all records, beating Gerd Müller's record of 41 goals, he's been overly reading that maybe Haaland will come. What will Lewandowski do then? Will he leave in the summer so we will get Haaland in? And then he said earlier in the week or 2 weeks ago, he said that they haven't talked to me at Bayern. And then before the game today, the fantastic Salihamidzic, the head of sport at Bayern Munich, suddenly said, well, we would absolutely love to have Lewandowski at the club. Okay, that is breaking news because he's the best striker in the world, but okay. So after the game, they say to Lewandowski, listen, the head of sport said before the game, they want you to stay at the club. And he said, oh, did they? The first time I've heard that. So, I mean, that is not the best management in the world. And when Bayern Munich, with the record they're having now, losing players on a free, which is the fashion in Bayern, in Munich at the moment, I mean, that is a bit worrying for them because they are desperate to keep Manuel Neuer, Thomas Müller and Lewandowski in their future Bayern Munich team.
For a lot more on what's been going on this weekend, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gavin Jules podcast that drops on Monday. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Lots going on. We'll, of course, be back tomorrow for the Carabao Cup final. Be sure to join us here at 11 a.m. Eastern. Be sure to stay tuned now, though, for extra time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Shaka's here. Don joins us as well. Where are you, Jan?
I am in London waiting for the League Cup final.
Oh, what a moment. You should have met up with Don. You could have had a big Sam Bielsa.
You should have called me Zach the Plancha.
Where are you? Where are you, Don? Where are you home?
I'm just outside of London, miles away from you, Jan. I can't get there. I'm coming.
Jan, will this be your last thing before you go to bed, or will you venture out into London tonight? Because what's it, 11 o'clock there? Still a bit of time.
No, I'm going to bed, of course.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You don't have a gig tomorrow.
I'm coming soon.
Don. Rangnick is fired and you are named manager for Manchester United. Wouldn't that be brilliant?
Yeah, that would be so bizarre.
How do you fix the situation and get them into the top four?
Ooh. Big Sam.
Big Sam's his assistant.
Big Sam. I'd get Big Sam in as my number two. I would find desperately a way to try and get Cavani into my side. And I'd play him alongside Ronaldo. And I'd say to Ronaldo, you are now not a number nine anymore, Cristiano. You are now a number 10. You've got a free roll. Get on the ball. Get in the 18-yard box. Relax. Don't be the number nine. Cavani will do all the running. He'll do all the graft. That's how you get Man United firing.
Oh, there you go. And you'll say, who are you?
You ask a guy who played for Liverpool and Everton how to get Manchester United in top four.
Yeah.
You're asking for your own trouble.
Yeah, and it's your mate...
Well, so, am I wrong, Shaq? am I wrong?
You're not right.
Jan, is your mate Ollie loving this?
No, I don't think so. I think one of the reasons he was a Man United manager in the first place because he loved the club, and he would be worried. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
He would be worried with Manchester United form, and he would be worried about the games coming up in March. I mean, that's going to worry him.
Any outrageous football skill that they have seen once on a pitch in any league and they've never forgot it?
Ooh.
Yep.
Do you want to tell us, Don, or not?
Yeah. Dennis Bergkamp against Newcastle. Never seen it done before, and I've never seen it done after.
Yeah. Talk us through
but,
it, Don.
But is it? Yeah, talk us through it, yeah.
I mean, it was just an outrageous bit of skill. I mean, like, I can't even imagine how... That's why I questioned it for years, and I used to say to people, did he really mean it? Was it a bit of a bad touch? And I asked Ian Wright, I went, Wrighty, did he really mean it? And he went, honestly, he's that good. He would have meant it. And he sort of flicked it round the corner. I can't think of the Newcastle defender
Dabby's
who went
ass.
All
it
in
was
to
Nico's
try and win
Dabby's
it.
Ass.
And Dabby's ass. Yeah, and he sort of flicked it round the corner and sort of spun the other way, which is unconventional. It was just amazing.
Yeah, but it's a good point because that when Dennis Bergkamp did that, and I did the same, we had to rewind an FF on your video recorder and trying to find out, did he really mean it? But the thing is, when it was Dennis Bergkamp, you know he meant it. Yeah. With all other players in the world, you will think that was just a coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had a player... Oh, sorry, Shaq,
no, go ahead,
to do a Dennis... No, I had a new trick, so you go on with your...
I was going to say, well, a lot of people still talk about...
What was it, a magic trick?
The Canio volley against, yes. I think it was Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And again, yeah. Big question was, what did he mean it? You know, but I think I broke my leg a couple months before, so I wasn't in the team. But I had seen... Paolo do that time and time again in training. It was not a fluke. Mm. It's not something that just... I even saw him doing an interview where you're saying, oh, it just kind of came to me. I'm like, no, I have seen Paolo do that
right.
in training time and time again. So when he did it against Wimbledon, it came as no surprise that he did it, executed it as well as he did, because I'd considered a few of those in training ground myself.
Yeah?
I had a funny thing. I played with a guy in Eintracht Frankfurt, a guy called Ansgar Brinkmann. He's one of those guys who have one tracksuit and one pair of shoes, and he's the happiest man alive. And he's an Arminia Bielefeld player. I met him there now. He's in his 50s now, and he's just doing a documentary because it was one of those street kids, you know. And I played with him when we played Bayern Munich away. And, you know, sometimes in training you can stand on the ball and you can just, like, try to stand on the ball and you do this like a captain. So mm-hmm. we played Bayern Munich away. And he went one against Lothar Matthäus. Lothar Matthäus, of course, the libero of the sweeper of Bayern Munich. And then he suddenly, in the middle of that attack, he just stopped and did like this. And I thought, how can you do that against Bayern Munich? So there have been some funny things around, and I think then we boys will sit down, we'll come up with some of those funny tricks that people have done throughout the career.
Jan, obviously you're going to the final tomorrow. Who's going to win, Chelsea or Liverpool?
It's been said that this Liverpool team haven't won enough under Klopp because they should have been even more successful with the team and with Jurgen Klopp and everything. So I got a feeling that they will get it. Having said that, the culture of Chelsea and Manchester City, this culture of winning these kind of games and these tricky games, and I think it's 6 years since Liverpool were back at Wembley, we're making a very open game. But I just got a feeling that this statement that came tonight with Abramovich and the ownership and everything, that will play a role, because these are funny times now at Chelsea, and they try to kind of painted with colors, but I think this is more serious than we think. I also think it's more serious for English football because there could be the end of this league being a playground for anyone who has some money.
We'll, of course, be showing you the game live on ESPN Plus in the States. Meanwhile, Don, percentage chance Rashford gets called up for the World Cup.
I'm not going to kick the kid while he's down. Honestly, he came on today. I said before about the Man United performance, it wasn't really on Ralf Rangnick, it was on the players. The only thing I thought he got wrong today was when he brought Rashford on, who's out of form, and he didn't bring Jesse Lingard on. I thought he might have been a better fit. But listen, he's gone through a bad bit of time in his career. We've all been there as pros. I like him. I think he does a lot off the pitch. Wonderful stuff. He's a fantastic talent on the pitch. He's just going through a really poor time in general. He's had a couple of managers. I can't really paint an excuse for him. I'm trying. I can't. He's going to have to knuckle down. He's got to find time on the training ground. He's got to go through it. You go through all the pain, and then something will happen where something will drop for him or he'll produce something and his confidence will come back. But he's under pressure now at Man United. I think with the form of Anthony Elanga and Jadon Sancho of late, he's now struggling to get in Man United's team.
What's your percentage, Don?
Oh, I don't want to kick him while he's down.
Just to be a part of the squad. Don, when you don't know, there's a trick I give you, a percentage. You can just say it's 50-50. That is an easy answer.
No, it's more than that. It's more than that. What, he goes 60, to the 50, World Cup? 60-50. 80-20.
80-20.
80-25.
Oh. That says even more than that. Wait, did Don just say 80-20?
He said 80-20.
Oh, I thought he said 80-25.
Okay, good.
90-10.
I'll say it's barring injury, Gareth Southgate caused Rashford in his
But he hasn't been very good.
We've had this discussion around Gareth Southgate and his picks, and specifically about his goalkeepers. And in Pickford, we've had this discussion. If you haven't let Gareth Southgate down, regardless of what you're doing at club, he's going to pick you. And I don't think Rashford has let Gareth Southgate down. He's going to pick Rashford. I'm going 100-0.
Missed the penalty in the Euro
100-0.
Final. 100-0. For Xhaka, Ali Moreno describes Celta Vigo's goalkeeper as Xhaka-trocious. Do you have anything to say on this?
Nope.
Xhaka-strophic, Xhaka-trocious.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And we said as much.
What, in live comms?
Yes.
In live comms?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you do that with a team? Can you do that?
Yeah, no, it was bad. It was a goalkeeping error.
Here we go.
Xhaka, you're not taking the point,
Dan.
Xhaka, he's having a go at you, and you are analysing like a pundit.
This is not new, Jan. This is not new at all.
Final question for Don: Steven Gerrard, Xavi, or Arteta? Who do you think will end up having a better managerial career?
Ooh.
I thought you were going to say who. I thought you were going to say who's the best player.
Oh, no.
I'm going to park Mikel Arteta.
Okay.
For sure.
Why?
Why? Because I think the other two are better. Well, he's parked for a reason, Jan, because I think the other two are better.
He's been a manager for 5 minutes. How can you park him?
No, I didn't say Xavi, I said Arteta. Listen in, Jan.
You park Arteta because you don't think he could be the best manager. That's what you did, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But how can you do that when Xavi has been... He's not even arrived at the parking house yet.
I'm sorry. Is Dan CFC asked that question, or was it Jan?
Okay.
I'm going to go Xavi because I think he's got the best chance managing Barca. And I commentated on the Napoli 4-2 the other day, and they are nearly back. And I'd like to see Barca back.
Jan?
Yes.
Park Arteta?
I will start by parking John. No. It's a tough one because, of course, Arteta has been the longest and going to Guardiola school and so on. And he's done good at Arsenal. That's why I thought it was a bit Yeah, well, just parking was a bit nonsense to say it straight.
Well, he's not going to win anything, is he, Jan? What's the chances of Arteta winning something?
How can you say that? Sam's just he won against Napoli.
Well, he's got Liverpool, Chelsea, Man City.
Was it Europa League or Conference League? I'm not sure what he did win that game in. And then Gerrard, I mean, he could be a great manager and he could end up at Liverpool. So you're saying if he started off being a manager in Liverpool, he would be a better than Arteta straight away? That's what you're saying?
I don't know, because I haven't got a crystal ball, Jan. I don't know if he's going to end up at Liverpool.
You have your
but Xavi's at Barca, that's why I went for Xavi.
I'm paying on your arguments. Xavi's just been in Barcelona.
Xavi, answer you're looking
two
for.
Two weekends.
Xavi.
Right. Thank you very much. What are those two?
Love you too, Don.
I can't remember.
Love you, Jan.
Waldorf.
I can't remember.
That is it. Thank you very much. ESPN FC back tomorrow. Jan, of course, will be at the Carabao Cup final. What a moment for Jan. Don, not there. Doesn't want to be anywhere near Jan.
Don will be in his garage.
Don will be parking Arteta's car.
In the parking house.
Be sure to join us tomorrow for everything you need to know about what's happening.